are tuned to Maranatha Drive on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Now, when we talk education, it's something that each and every person must have. In fact, the Human Rights Commission saying it's a right where if you deprive somebody, even if they are your child, you can find yourself getting a jail term for not participating in their rights. Now, we are looking today at financial literacy in schools, and we are going to be joined on the line by my leader, Mlamuli Mba. Talking to us about how that is all about achieved. Now, the foundations for becoming a healthy adult, right? Physical foundation and emotional foundation, financial foundation also necessary, are laid during childhood, often by observing parents' behavior. So research has shown that many children's money habits, like self-monitoring, are developed as early as 7 years old. Yep. You heard that right. So by teaching your children about financial literacy from a young age, you actually give them a head start and a better chance of having a healthy relationship with money later on in life, which can be a benefit even to their psychological health. So that about having financial literacy as an essential part of the school curriculum, does it matter? How come if it's so important, we don't learn about it? Let's have a conversation about that. And we've got Mlamuli on the line. Good afternoon to you and welcome to the Maranatha Drive.
Afternoon, Derek. How are you?
No, doing okay. Thank you so much. And how are you doing?
I'm good. Just also like to say hello to your listeners.
Thank you so much. And thank you for joining us, accepting our invitation. We appreciate your thoughts and your participation this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So we're talking education, especially with an angle of financial literacy. We're hearing research saying about 7 years old, they need to be in the business of knowing about money. How early do children start learning about money management, do you think?
I think that sounds about right. I think we truly underestimate what kids see, observe, and what they can learn. Mm-hmm. I mean, from a personal standpoint, I remember when my son went to grade one.
Okay.
The teacher, I asked him if they offer chess because, you know, it's a full-on primary school.
Okay.
And he said, yes, but not for grade ones. And I said, because grade ones can't play chess. And I said, no, but he can. He does with me.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
So there's these assumptions that we have of certain things come at a certain age. But you'd find that if you just challenge a child and if they have a passion for it, you'd be amazed at what they can grasp. Certainly. And this also includes money, and they also observe the words we use. You know, many parents go, "Anginamali," like, I don't have any money, and stuff like that. Those things are imprinted. Actually,
true.
One of
true.
My key and the second most and the second most important wheel is your first memory of money. And research shows that
Mlamuli,
this is usually...
Can I cut you there?
Hello?
We missed you for a couple of seconds there. Do you mind coming through with one of the most important before you come to the second one?
All right. So it's the three foundational wheels of money.
Okay.
And for this conversation, I think the second most important one is the first memory of money.
Okay.
And research shows that's between age of 6 till age of 8 usually. And my one smack bang is our 7 years old. And most of us operate from that first memory of money. So if, for example, my one was my mother shouting at me about it's her money.
Wow.
And she works hard for her money. So I grew up to be stingy and hardworking. And was only when I realized that memory
and how it's got such an impact on your life.
When someone asks for something. Yes. And a lot of us are on autopilot of that first memory. So once you have an awareness of it, you are then able to actually start counteracting it.
Wow. I had never considered it from that perspective. Our first memory of money gets to impact our rest of our financial habits. I think that's profound. That is quite something. I've got a listener here saying, "Yeah, vele anginayo mos imali, I don't have that money indeed." And I guess what becomes confusing for the child is someone says anginamali, and then they go out and take out money. And then it then means that there is a disconnect, meaning anginamali doesn't mean I don't have money. It just means I don't want to give. And I think you made the point already to say it means I become stingy. Even though I've got the money, I must not give because I don't have it. Yeah, you're holding it in your hand. No, it's not for giving, this one. Yeah, quite profound. I wanted to touch on your point you made earlier on. Please tell me that they then said, okay, we'll make a plan to involve him in the chess club. I'm talking about your son now.
Oh, no, it didn't. We just continued playing. Then by grade three, he then played with the school.
But why not say, okay, let him just come and fumble around with the others, even though he is the only one in the class? I mean, it is school after all. It's not like it's competitive to try and win grandmaster tournaments.
Well, it is what it is. But I think one of the key reasons for putting financial literacy in schools is that the way I see school and education is that it's supposed to prepare us for adulthood. Now, if we all know that we're going to have to deal with money, then for me, it makes logical sense that we should then have financial education, because whether they go into businesses, whether they get a job, a career, etc., they will be paid in money. So they do need to understand this thing. And another powerful thing that we did with another school in Eastern Cape was a sponsor bought books, and we donated the books to the school in Eastern Cape. And the teacher said the kids are having bigger dreams. So, for example, once you become financially literate, you realize that money doesn't only follow a job. Most of schooling is study hard, good grades, get a good job. But once you're financially literate, you realize that money follows value. Now, value can be done whether you are 10, you can give value whether you're 10 years old, whether you're 16, or whether you're working. So they're now starting little businesses around the school and around at home. And they're also providing value to their parents that maybe have like cabbages and stuff like that. So they're helping them with packaging it, selling it, et cetera, et cetera. Because once you're financially literate, it's like your eyes open to other ways of having money follow the value that you can create.
Money follows value. And if you've got nothing to offer, don't expect money to come your way. I think that's a profound lesson. And I want to just maybe touch on that point a bit more, if you don't mind. This idea of money and school, especially financial literacy, like you're saying. What will it take, especially with and your response to the first point of how your child was told, no, you've got to wait until grade three. Is that not what has kept us in this black hole, if you will, where nothing escapes, of saying, no, the kids are too young to learn about money, and they're too young even at high school level to learn about money? When are we going to start seeing a change? And when we will say, no, but guys, look at them, they're competent. And by the way, research is showing 1, 2, 3, which is... I don't know. When is that going to happen?
So for me, in my journey of trying into schooling, what I found is that essentially a school district can actually determine what is also included. So for example, in the Eastern Cape example, the English teacher and life orientation teacher added the book as additional reading, added my financial literacy book as additional reading. So the district manager does have some leeway in the curriculum to say, you know what, I think this is very important, so can we add it as either an additional reading resource, or can we add it as life orientation? So it I think perhaps we tend to try to have this conversation from a national level, whereas you can actually speak to your district. As parents, we've signed these forms because we think this is a critical element and it's important, and you might find to change a few things.
Certainly, certainly. Can you just share the name of
the
book?
Yeah, but it would be difficult.
It would be.
Because you can imagine how much needs to move.
Yes, yes. And there's a lot of red tape that you need to jump over and so forth. And I think that approach of addressing the grassroots, and I want to circle back in a few just to talk about the parental side of things. But first, I want to say you spoke about your book, and perhaps the listener tuning in today might not be aware of the book. Do you want to maybe just give us a quick rundown of what book we're talking about and where they can get it?
Okay, thank you so much. So the book is called Winning the Money Game, A Guide to Financial Wellbeing. And the book is essentially wealthy grandparents are having a conversation with their grandson. And as the reader, as you are reading, you get to participate in that conversation. And it is purely an African story that is embedded with financial lessons. One lady put it very well. She said, you know what, Mla, your book is the yogi sip to the castor oil that is finance. So readers, listeners can get it at either Exclusive Books or Take a Lot. I think is the most convenient.
No, thank you so much. And definitely let's support that and also equip our children with this. I want us to come and talk about how to integrate this, because you say the book is in schools, which means it's age appropriate. But first, I wanted to address the issue of parents, to say sometimes we want to leave everything to the schooling system. What role do parents have in also ensuring that even though the school might not yet, maybe in your district, in your neighborhood, in your area, they don't have that financial literacy, you can then just blame the system. Do they have a role to also equip their children with financial literacy?
I think they have the biggest role.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right. We do sometimes abdicate the responsibility to the schools and teachers, but ultimately, I think parents have the biggest role. For me, I'd commend some parents. Hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yes, I would commend parents. They actually, I think when I look at the demographic, most times a book is bought by a parent for a child, like a teen, etc.
Right.
So parents are mindful of this. And also the conversations we have don't, I think we think of our children as babies and toddlers for way too long. Quote unquote grown up conversations with them. You know, instead of saying angnamali, you know, start talking about a budget. That you have a household budget, and the way the budget is right now, it means you cannot get this at this present moment because the budget is in this way. And then they're like, oh, what is budgeting? They are budgeting, they tuck money. Etc. When they do chores, you know, for example, my daughter jokes that so when she does chores here, she's just doing chores. But at a granny's house, when she does chores, she gets money. So she's joking that when it's cool, it's like, no, at granny's house, I clean the house and I get money. I'm like, oh.
It's more profitable at granny's.
And. You know, this person is 5 years old, so I can imagine her cleaning, you know, it's not. But she's now going that, okay, when I go to granny's house, I have a job as well. Because when I clean, granny gives me money. So all of those things actually leave a bigger impression than you would think.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for that. And I think we kind of miss that to say it's that even at home where those lessons, most lessons are actually learned. I think that's how we started, right, to say they learn by seeing, and it's how we conduct ourselves. Now, your book and maybe finance in general, how does it, can we make it age appropriate? I mean, some of the concepts, I mean, I remember raising this idea at one seminar I was conducting some time back, and we were talking to say, don't just, especially like what you're talking about, right? To say, don't just say angnamali. Get them involved in the financial aspect of the home, right? In the budgeting structure. And parents are like, they're too young. They must know that we have so much money in the house. I'm like, if you don't include them, fair and fine, you might not disclose some of those sensitive matters. But get them aware to say, this is how a budget works, you know? Because you can't just, especially if it was a church setup, to say, if you go to church and all you do is then shove a 5 rand in their pocket or in their hand when it's time to offer. For them in their mind, money is not to be given, is not mine. It must come from mommy. It must come from somewhere else. I can't give my own money. And you need to teach bigger. How can we make it so that we don't feel like it's taboo to speak to our young ones? Is there age-appropriate lessons or a way to transmit these lessons to younger minds?
Definitely. So, I mean, I've seen instances where they do financial shows, financial skits, financial plays. Actually, also in conversation with someone about converting the book into animation.
Okay.
Because what I'm advocating for is that in my spaces, I use storytelling, which is something that we all enjoy. Okay. We all enjoy reading a good story. And it just so happens that the story is embedded with financial principles. I find that too many times these sessions just go on a point of you must save. And it's not layered in story. It's not layered in scenarios. It's not layered in metaphors that can build a bridge to understanding.
Okay.
For example, I think of it like gym. You know, going to gym and being fit is quite straightforward. You go there and you lift weights or you run. But when you work on the why, the storytelling of why must I get up and go to gym? Why is this important to me? That is usually the difference between someone being consistent and becoming fit or them not really doing the whole working out thing. Mm. So I think finance is most of the time told from a place of a how, and it tends to be very reprimanding, you shouldn't do that, etc., etc., instead of it being just we naturally do as part of life. But also in the church context, what I see come up quite often in coaching and workshops is that the belief that money is the root of all evil. And, you know, some people, their businesses are doing well or they're earning well. But if fundamentally you believe that money is the root of all evil, you tend to push it away from you and you have an unhealthy relationship with it. So that's another thing that I think our belief around it, we seem to have a saintly view of poverty. And evil, corrupt view of wealth and prosperity.
And we need to correct that, right? Because even if you look at the scripture, it's not saying money is the root of all evil. It's the love thereof. It's when you covet it, that's where you get challenges.
Can I ask a question, Derek?
Uh-huh.
Someone who's in who thinks more about money, someone who's in financial well-being or someone who's stressing about paying rent?
Certainly the one who doesn't have it is the one who is always thinking about money more than the one who's financially free.
Therefore, who would love it more?
It's clear. Certainly. Wow. Quite a poignant one there, and where we need to really ponder upon these matters a bit more. I think we run a risk of jeopardizing future generations if we continue in the way we've always behaved. If we want to break a cycle, you need to be deliberate about it. And I think this is an opportunity, both from at home and also at schools. And I think I like how you, maybe for you, you've got a bit of skin in the game. So it was your book that you had to push in. But I think every parent listening to this conversation this afternoon, whoever's going to listen to the podcast as it comes out, needs to then say, you know what? Can't I advocate for something like this in my district where my child is going to say, hey guys, why not just include this as an extra mural, whatever it is, you know, so that kids are aware of what's going on out there. Thank you so much for this. Any wrap-up remarks as we
close off?
And Derek,
you just mentioned something so important in terms of the next generation.
Yeah.
So one of the things I usually say is I think most of the times it's not generational curses. It's actually generational habits that keeps families in poverty and struggling. And in order to change that, then we need to change the kind of conversations we're having. And how do we change conversations we're having? We change them by the material and stuff that we expose ourselves to, like reading these books, or watching those YouTube channels, listening to those radios, I mean, those shows that actually speak a different language than, you know, the typical language that is discussed about finances.
Certainly. Wow. Well, thank you so much, my brother. May God bless you for what you're doing, God's work indeed. And thank you once again for spending the evening with us. We appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Only a pleasure. That's Mlamuli Mbambo joining us this afternoon as we are looking at financial literacy. This is our education corner here on the Maranatha Drive, having a conversation around financial literacy in the school curriculum. And we're saying, yeah, school is good to have, but the work actually can begin with you. And of course, don't forget to get a copy of the book, Winning the Money Game, A Guide to Financial Wellbeing, suitable even for the young minds. Go out at your bookstore or even online on Amazon and get yourself a copy.
You are tuned to Maranatha Drive on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.